I got out on a Tuesday morning and I was standing in front of the shower on one leg, fresh combing my hair when I had hair, singing a song on the radio. And I saw myself in the mirror singing a song, being perfectly happy. And I'm like, I just lost my leg and I'm perfectly happy. I've never been this happy before combing my hair. So clearly, like, that happiness and that success was not stuck in my leg. Like, that's not where it is. It's here and it's here.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and I'm really excited about this episode today. We've got an interview with a successful short-term rental investor, Mr. Paul Martin from Salt and Pepper Stays. So, Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me here, Sean. I really appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Super excited to have you. Normally, Paul, I talk to people that have been inside of the Vodacy mentorship and training, and we know their story and we know their journey. And I always like to, at times, bring in somebody from the outside who got interested in short-term rentals, who's succeeding at a high level, because I always say success leaves clues. And so I appreciate you joining us because you're coming in from a little bit different perspective than what we do here at Vodacy, possibly. And I want to learn a little bit about kind of how you navigated the journey into short-term rentals. But I always like to start, Paul, with your background. Who is Paul Martin? Where did you start from? Where'd you come from? And then let's navigate that journey into short-term rental and real estate investing in general. If you don't mind, I'd love to start there.
Yeah, sure, sure. I think it's a completely separate story. I think a lot of what I went through in the past led me to be able to work as an entrepreneur simply because I've been through so much adversity and found so many successes from some of the challenges I've had. And each one of those challenges has led to some sort of success, even though I didn't know it was coming until in hindsight. I'm like, oh yeah, that big challenge led to the success. And I put that together quite a while ago. And I now kind of look forward to those challenges. So the long, short story is I lost my leg in a car accident in 1992, below the knee on the left side. I was fresh out of college, 25 years old. And I had just started work. I just graduated. I just started working for this company. And I had to figure out how to, adjust, live my life. What do I have that I can still march forward with when I don't have my leg? When you're that young and you're kind of, strapping young man, so many questions, can I still be this dude I expect myself to be? And it did not take me long at all to figure that out, that I was just the same exact guy. A story I like to tell that kind of, I think, wraps up the whole, my attitude towards this whole thing. I was in the hospital for 6 to 8 weeks or so, and I got out on a Tuesday morning and I was standing in front of the shower on one leg, fresh combing my hair when I had hair, singing the song on the radio. And I saw myself in the mirror singing a song, being perfectly happy. And I'm like, I just lost my leg and I'm perfectly happy. I've never been this happy before combing my hair. So clearly, like, that happiness and that success was not stuck in my leg. Like, that's not where it is. It's here and it's here. So I really marched forward from that almost right out of the gate. Like, okay, this is not, I'm still the same dude. Let's see what we can do with it. I had just graduated with a mechanical engineering degree, and they hire engineers in a lot of companies to do sales. And I didn't want to be an engineer. I figured out before I was even done my studies. So I went into sales, started working for this company, and realized I wasn't really fulfilled selling their product. It didn't do much for me. Same time, I was learning how to be active with this prosthesis. And I'd been skiing, been running, been biking. And I decided that I was going to move to Colorado and pursue the U.S. Olympic ski team, Paralympic ski team, to pursue the 98. This dates me a little bit. The 98 Paralympic Games were in Nagano, Japan. So I moved out to Colorado, started ski racing full time, and I didn't not make the team. I actually had a crash in a pretty nasty race in Utah. I think it was a Park City at the time. Got a concussion, broke my shoulder, slid down the hill like a rag doll. So I'm told, woke up in an ambulance, and I did not make the team. I made it the following year. I didn't make it the Paralympic team, but I made the national Alpine disabled team. And I was still like itching to make the big games. And in the meantime, I'd been in triathlon in the summertime and cycling. And I showed up in my first national championship bike race, and I won the time trial. I won the road race, and didn't take long to figure out that I was going to be a cyclist in the Paralympic Games. And I went to Sydney 2000. I went to Athens in 2004, got a couple medals in Athens on the track, won the world championships in between in 2002. So that kind of became my life, and my journey was being an athlete. I was full time. I figured out how to make money being a poor amateur athlete by speaking to schools, by getting media attention and getting media contracts with companies, and promoting myself wherever I went. And I found myself as a professional athlete, just by traveling, racing, promoting myself, figuring out how to be an entrepreneur in that space. Like, how do you make money as a full-time amateur athlete? Well, you find ways. And in my case, it started with a friend saying, hey, I teach fifth grade. Can you come speak to my students? And how much do you charge? And I'm like, oh, I charge $300. She goes, oh, will you do two talks for $500? I'm like, I sure will. And then I started marketing myself to schools. Got a friend that was working for Balance Bar, their energy bar company. And he said, hey, we have a media incentive. If you, you know, get our logo on the news or something, you know, we'll pay you a little bit of money. Did a race like the following weekend in Colorado, was on the front page of the local newspaper, running down the road with the prosthesis. This is, you know, back in the 90s. It wasn't quite so popular then. And I made like $500 doing that. And I started to realize there's a way to make money here. Let's take what I got, what I love to do, and figure out how to leverage it into cash flow. And so I would race, I'd get on the local news, and I'd make money being an athlete. And so I was learning back then how to make something good come out of something not so good. And that wasn't my first real challenge. I actually put myself in a foster home when I was 16 years old because life wasn't so hot at home. And I almost immediately found the benefits of taking advantage or making whatever situation you're in. Don't be the victim. You're in charge. Make it work for you. And I went, you know, I went to college after that, got myself back on track. I was a bit of a troublemaker growing up, believe it or not. And going into the foster home helped kind of settle things down. And that's when I went to school and got my degree and kept marching forward. And so, you know, jumping right along here, after doing this for a lot of years, I met my wife here in Boulder, Colorado. She was a medical student at the time. And I'd been doing a lot of traveling, a lot of speaking. And it was a little difficult as we got married, had kids, for me to continue that traveling lifestyle. I stayed at home and took care of the kids. We have three boys. It was a great, wonderful honor to be able to be home and spend time with them and help raise them and raise them. And I decided, you know, this traveling and speaking, it was difficult with the little kids. I wanted to do something from home. And that's when real estate came to me, because my dad had a couple of rentals growing up, and I believe I've been shoveling. It snowed like a foot and a half in the last day and a half. I've been shoveling a bunch, which reminded me of how much shoveling I did at my dad's rentals back in Massachusetts. They were literally in my, one was in our front yard, one was across the street. And so it was just lots of shoveling, lots of work. And my dad was such a hardworking dude. And I just saw what he built from almost nothing. He took these old dilapidated apartment buildings in Central Mass and made something out of it. And then I had done a lot of work. I'd swung hammers in my day. I know how to fix things, do things, drywall, paint, whatever it is, I can do it. And so it was kind of natural for me to buy a foreclosed property, fix it up and get rolling with it. And it just kept on going. I kind of got the real estate bug, and next thing you know, I had a whole 40 or 50 rentals and just rolling with it.
That's awesome. I love it. And I love starting with somebody's backstory. I always find it fascinating that so many people, when you have reached a level of success, from the outside looking in, they look and say, oh man, it must have been so easy. You know, it must have been, you know, you're so lucky, right? And when I hear, that's why I always start with backstories, because their backstories always have so many challenges and setbacks. And the most successful people I know have some of the biggest challenges and setbacks. And you're no stranger to challenges and setbacks, from the childhood of moving into foster homes, to losing your leg in the car accident, to then ultimately having your dream crushed with a major ski accident. And you just figure out ways to continue to move forward. Like I always tell people, this mantra that we stand by is that nobody's coming to save us, right? Nobody's doing it for us. We can't play the victim. And we live by this law of that, you know, personal reliance and self, or personal responsibility and self-reliance, is the ultimate key to building that life we don't want to take a vacation from, right? And so, and just listening to you tell your backstory, it's why I love starting there, is because it leads to so many different things. It's like you said, you know, you're not going to play the victim. You're going to try to take, you know, you're going to try to make lemonades out of lemons, right? And we're trying to take these setbacks, learn from these challenges, and say, hey, listen, everything that happens to me just makes me stronger, and I'm going to be able to move forward and forge forward. Because some of the things you look at now, some of the challenges that people look at in a real estate deal or something, you're like, man, that's not a challenge. That's really not that big of a deal from what I've already gone through, right? And so I love starting with the backstory. So we got into, it sounds like, not into the short-term rental game. You started to say, hey, listen, I'm kind of like this real estate game. We started building a portfolio, you said 40 or 50 homes. I'm assuming long-term rentals, if we're talking about that, right? So let's kind of dive into that real estate. But I really appreciate you diving into the backstory, because it's so common that people with a lot of success had probably some of the biggest and most challenges along the way, and they're able to overcome them. And it's why they continue to forge forward.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. Without the challenges, you know, I wouldn't be who I am. I wouldn't have that like rock solid confidence that I'm going to succeed if I didn't have all these things I had to get past. Like I still make mistakes. I'm just very recently, I'm having a huge challenge with one of my properties, one of my lease options, not the short term, but one of those. It's almost nightmarish, but that's just another thing I'm getting through. But you know, the short term thing only came around to me maybe 2 years ago, when one of my properties up in Estes Park, Colorado. It's a beautiful place, 1 acre, 2,400 square feet, just 360 mountains all around it. I was originally going to flip it, and my wife said, you know, this would be a great house for us someday in the future, babe. Can we figure out how to hold on to this? And I'm like, yeah, we'll make it happen. And it started out as a long-term rental. And then I long-term until I could get through the short-term rental qualification process in Larimer County, went in front of the jury, the council a couple times. And basically it was too much neighbor opposition. There was significant neighbor opposition to me having this as a short-term rental. There was a couple around already in the neighborhood. They didn't want any more. It's really nice residential neighborhood. And I understand. I didn't fight it. So I went into the midterm space and found a midterm renter on, I think that first one I got was Furnished Finders, a couple of nurses in the local hospital. And then it turned into one great midterm renter after another, including an insurance deal that, you know, from locals, which paid really well. And that was kind of my entree, was that particular house. Figuring out how to make it work. And in the meantime, I knew I wanted to do more of these short terms and figure it all out and get in that space. So, you know, did some studying, learned a few things, and got a couple in New Hampshire, one in Vermont. We got a cabin in Tennessee, and got one in Pueblo, Colorado, and we're building this duplex in Belize, which is what I want to get to before we're done here. The short terms, as soon as I did my first few turns and with guests and realized they come and go and they're happy and they pay more and there's no drama to speak of, that's kind of what hooked me. I have a good number of rentals back in Massachusetts that are multifamilies, 2, 3, 4 bedroom units. That's the majority of those 40 I mentioned. I self-managed those for a long time and just a lot of work. Now we have property management that takes care of those, but there's still so much drama that I hear about, but I don't deal with, right? But for the short terms, there's just so little drama.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people, when I talk to people who have invested in multiple asset classes, multifamily, long-term rentals, short-term rentals, and they have experience in all of them, right? You know, there's a lot of people who don't have a lot of experience in different asset classes, have an opinion on them. But those people that actually have invested in a lot of different asset classes, I hear the same thing. They say, and I'm the same way. I've invested in a lot of different asset classes, and I feel like there's a lot less drama on the short-term rental side, when a lot of times from the outside looking in, people think there's more because you're dealing with more people in and out of a property, a lot more turns typically than you would on a long-term rental. But the difference is those people really want to be there. They're having a great experience, right? They love the property as much as we do. And so there is less drama. And so even though you're dealing with more people, you got a lot less drama typically on a short-term rental, especially one that's set up and delivering a great experience. And so it's interesting you bring that part up as well. And I love hearing that and kind of want to emphasize that, because I do have a lot of conversations with a lot of investors who have never invested in more than one asset class, and vice versa. Lots of investors who have invested in a lot of different asset classes, and the misconception is that short-term rentals have more drama and they're harder to deal with. That's not typically the case from people who have dealt with both.
Yeah, and it's the old rule, the old 80-20 rule, right? And it's about 80% of the problems come from 20% of your tenants. Well, they are very dramatic at times. With short terms, you might have to take more phone calls because, you know, it never ends. Like, hey, what's the code? Well, we've tried it 10 times already, but here we go. Here's the code, and here, you know, those kind of questions come in, and maybe the odd off hour phone call, but those are usually easy to deal with. There rarely is anybody upset. They have questions. You just got to answer the questions, and the more your systems are in place to address those questions ahead of time, of course, the smoother that gets. We're getting better at that, and I I'll be the first to admit I don't do this stuff. I have a full time assistant that deals with all the short term rental stuff. I kind of oversee it all, but I don't take the phone calls until, you know, she takes vacation, and then I take those phone calls. But there's really not too many, and there's really seldom is there a really upset guest, and
yeah,
it takes a lot.
So you kind of got into it, and you said you've used a couple of them as midterms because of some being able to get the short-term rental permits and licenses and stuff. How many of them are really dedicated to short-term rentals, or do you kind of cross over between the two because you like the opportunity on midterm and short-term together?
Yeah, I do a little bit of hybrid for sure. One good example we have went up in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. And right now I just got an insurance deal. This is only what is this one? 800 square foot up and down. It's a duplex. It's right on the edge of the trails. People love it. I got one short-term rental in it right now, if I'm not mistaken. The other one, it's an insurance deal. Like I said, they're paying $5,000 a month to stay in this 800 square foot place because there's nowhere else to go. I mean, if I could do, I would do those all day long if I could. You know, they don't come every day, of course, those insurance deals, but otherwise it's furnished. It's ready to go as a short-term rental. And we just picked that one up and rehabbed it, put it together. It wasn't on the market until last May or June, and it steadily grew and we've had great success with that.
It's interesting. The insurance deals are really sweet deals. Anybody that's listening, when you do have a short-term rental, again, they're hard to, they're kind of hit or miss whether you get them or not. But I have one of my properties right now that it's an insurance deal. Somebody's house burned down in an area that we have a property in, and they have an insurance deal. They came in for 18 months while they rebuild, and they're paying our entire like 100% occupancy at our regular short-term rental rates. And so it's pretty awesome, you know, and they can be really great deals when you get them. They're not always there, but always keep your eyes open for them, because you've mentioned that you on the Estes Park one, you had an insurance, somebody come in for that. You, on the New Hampshire one, you've got somebody on an insurance deal. Sometimes they're there. If you own a short-term rental, be open to that, because I have somebody in one of my properties currently that is on an insurance deal, and they can be really profitable tenants while they're there.
There is one thing that can make or break your success with short-term rentals, and that's your ability to provide your guests with an amazing night's rest. We're taking all of the guesswork out of selecting the perfect mattress system. Personally, I have these custom mattresses in every one of my short-term rentals. We love them so much that we even got them in our own personal homes here in Utah. So visit VodaceySleepSystem.com and use the promo code PODCAST. It's all caps at checkout to get 55% off.
Awesome. So Paul, let's talk about kind of the plans moving forward. You mentioned that you're kind of going international now. We've got a Belize project. Tell me a little bit about that and what you're excited about there.
Yeah, that's kind of, we expect that to be our flagship property. It's a right on the Caribbean. We got 75 foot of beach right in front of our house with a pier and a palapa. And that little bit of history there is I got a friend from Denver actually who, Boris Mansfeld is his name, and he's been going back and forth between Belize and Denver for 30 years. He's got a place down there, and he's become one of the main, the leading brokers in Placencia, Belize, which is this 13-mile peninsula south of Belize City. A lot of people go to Ambergris Key, San Pedro. This place is a little more chill, really relaxed, wonderful place. We were going there for vacation. We intended to, and I'm like, Boris, you just need some answers, where to go, what to do, this and that. Started talking real estate. At this time I'd become an investor, and he asked if I had any interest in buying one of his condos he just built. I'm like, no, not really. I wouldn't mind having my own beach place somewhere. And he said, well, I'll keep you in mind. And it wasn't a day or two later I got this deal for this available lot. Good chunk of money. But right there in the Caribbean, talked to my wife. She's Australian. She grew up on the beach, on the water. She's like, loves the idea of having some place on the beach to retire to one day. So I flew down there and spent literally 24 hours, interviewed four contractors, saw the property, saw the area. And told my wife we were going to bite the bullet and make it happen. And one of those four contractors done a wonderful job for me. It's probably 80, 90% done by now. We were hoping it was to be done by Christmas. Looks like it'll be May. We've already had one guest, a friend of ours, stay there to kind of give it a test drive. And it's going to be pretty awesome. Yeah. It's got an infinity pool with a cabana right next to it with a bar and a grill and a fridge and a big rooftop deck. And like I said, that pier right on the water. It's just gorgeous there in the morning. It's going to be something.
Sounds awesome. How big is it?
It's a duplex, each side, 2,000 square feet, each side, 3-bed, 3-bath. Let me just say that I had an idea to do something a little different with this one. And between the two units on the first floor, we have a partition that's kind of can join the two units. So if a big group wants to be together, they can have this communal area between the two. So you can rent either one side or the other or both and have the whole place to yourself.
Yeah. So you can split them up or host a large group and still be not separated, which is awesome. Yeah. It's a great way, especially when you can kind of purpose build it, right? When you're starting from the ground up, being in the game, I'm sure that you're being able to a new construction and you're purpose building this for short-term rental and for somebody coming in and staying, you can, whether it's owner's clauses, whether it's multiple master suites, all those different things that sometimes aren't always inside of a 3-2, right? And so it's being able to put that together exactly how you want it. We have a lot of people interested in expanding internationally. And I always tell them the two things you really have to pay attention to when you invest internationally is on the front end is what are the property ownership rights in the country you're investing in for a non-citizen, right, of that country. Like you need to understand that. Every country's got different property ownership rights for a non-citizen. And then two, the financing is going to be different. You need to navigate if it's going to be a cash deal, if you've got financing available. So going into Belize from being a U.S. citizen, I'm assuming you had to navigate those two things on the front end, right?
Yes, and I would say that I made some assumptions that were incorrect, at least one. So first of all, it's Belize, it was British Honduras until 40 years ago. It's like Canada, right? Commonwealth of the UK, and so it's got the same rules like U.S. United States' land ownership is based on Britain. Well, it's the same kind of stuff down there in Belize. So it's a very similar mortgage land ownership situation. Not much is different. Financing, however, is different. I thought it was going to be pretty easy to get myself a whatever it is, 75% loan or what a value, whatever it might be, at a reasonable rate. Well, they don't really do it that way down there. As it turns out, they don't have title insurance in Belize. They're working on this. It's something they're working on. So I can't get a standard loan. There is a bank down there that lent me 50% of the build value, not of the whole property value. So I'm only financed for about a third of this, you know, six, seven-figure property. So a lot of it came out of our pockets in our HELOC, and we're working on that. And the rate's not as good as I hoped it would be. But what's fantastic about it, which I didn't know, I learned in the process, but was pleasantly surprised that there's no real property tax down there. It's like $28 a year. I pay 8% upfront when I bought the land, but then there's no, you know, you're not paying $8,000 a year for taxes. You're paying $28. So that's a big bonus. This is a lot of money out of our pocket. So I am in the process right now of selling all my Massachusetts multifamilies I had mentioned. I have done quite well with those. I'll cash in and pay off all the cash that we put into the Belize. And so we'll have that nice cash flowing property. I'll have very little money owed on it. And as I've been joking around, I'd much rather own property in Belize than a three-decker in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Yeah, exactly.
When I retire.
Yeah. It's always an interesting, because you know, like you said, they're still good assets, right? And people are always ask me that, because I sell properties on a fairly regular basis. I will optimize a property, maximize it, sell it, and then put it into something else. And they always are like, well, if it was doing so well, you would never sell it. And the truth is, it's sometimes you're redeploying that capital where you can continue to grow it, right? We're taking a step up the ladder and a step up the ladder. And so I could have a really good producing property and then sell it, put it into something else that has more potential to grow. And then ultimately, if I maximize that one, we'll decide what we do with that down the line. But it's like, to your point, it's nice to have assets stacked up that you can redeploy and continue to build that portfolio, continue to maximize, continue to optimize the money that you've got in play. We want to make sure that we're really optimizing our equity in any property that we have. And sometimes that's leaving it in a property. Sometimes it's selling and redeploying it into something else. And so it's the exact strategy that a lot of real estate investors use to continue to raise the bar. And I think a lot of people, for whatever reason, when they look from the outside looking in at somebody that's investing and doing that, they just assume they're selling an asset because it's not performing. That's not always the case, right? And like your properties that you had, they were probably performing well. You've owned them long enough. You've got some good equity in them. They're doing well. You just have a better place for the money, right? And you know, people understand it on the home ownership side. When you talk to somebody that has a little gray hair like you and I, usually their mortgage payment is at or below what their first mortgage payment was on their fourth or fifth or sixth house. It's because every time they sell, they take that equity, put it into something that bigger and better. Take that equity, put it into something bigger and better. And so they're keeping this same mortgage along the way, like, you know, and you talk to somebody that's our age and they've got a mortgage smaller than a first time buyer that's going and buying something today. And it's kind of that same concept that we do with our investment property portfolio, and we just continue to grow it. And so I kind of wanted to break that down a little bit, because there's a lot of people listening that haven't done that before. And they're always like, well, why would you sell something if it's so good, you would never sell? That's not the truth.
And I'll stack on that. So, you know, a good performing property. Okay, we're selling, I think there's six buildings, 16, 17 units that we're selling right now. I got above ask on every one of them because they're all producing money. They're all running well. They're all been fixed up. They're performing good. They're good properties. And these investors know that. And that's what they want. They see that, you know, the rent rolls are all, everyone always pays. There's very little deferred maintenance. So I'm getting a great deal on each one. I'm getting a great price on every one of these. One thing I can't do, which I don't know if I would have done differently. Can't 1031 to a property into a
yes.
Belize property.
So, great point. Yep. Great point to make.
I'm paying my tax. I'll be paying my taxes, and that's okay.
Part of the game, right? And so, and that's a great point. And so, and then obviously, there's challenges when anytime you're building something in a different country, like, you know, the timing wise and things like that, you're not there, right? Those are always challenges. That's hard if you do it across the country, let alone in another country. But the big difference is there any other big difference between the two that I tell people they really need to be aware of on the front end with property ownership rights and then the lending and the financing available? Anything else that you know, it's fresh on your mind, you're into an international deal? Anything else that you would say, man, make sure you pay attention to this as well?
Well, without a doubt, it's hiring that contractor. If you're not going to be there, you got to get the right one. And so I'll tell you a little story here. So I'm down there in Belize. I don't know how long ago this was, 6-8 months ago. And we're hanging out with this British dude who just built a 6-room guest house with a tiki bar on the water, chatting with him. And he was just telling me the nightmares he went through with his contract. Oh, you got to be here every day. You got to be watching. They're going to take shortcuts. La, la, la. And I'm like, he's freaking me out. I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm going to be here every day. I live, you know, very far away, and I'm not coming here to manage this property. And he says, oh, who's your contractor? Oh, I said, Elvis. He goes, oh, Elvis, you'll be fine. I'm like, oh, geez. Well, I'm glad you told me that. We didn't have to set me up for the heart attack first. But so I've got a really good, solid contractor. I'll be frank, as of late, he's a little less answering the phone. But overall, not bad. Whenever I go down there, he's just so easy to talk to, honest. Property's coming out really well. Everything's happening. It's just, you know, it is kind of island time. So the 1 year or 12 month goal we had is becoming 18 months. And that's not all that bad. And I 100% trust him. You know, there's nothing fishy going on. It's just taking him up longer than he thought.
Yeah. And it's, I'm excited for you. I mean, you're close. Like you said, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're into March here, and it's going to be hopefully wrapped up in May. It's going to be really fun for you to see that come to life. Awesome, Paul. Well, listen, we're kind of getting to the end of the conversation. At the end, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your story and the whole story. It's really, I feel like I love having these conversations. I love just kind of unpacking the journey, unpacking the lessons learned along the way. And so I always appreciate you doing that. And because, you know, the listeners also, you know, they're, you know, those of you that are listening, we know how valuable your time is. And I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I did. I love these conversations. I always learn. I'm always inspired by the challenges that people overcome, the way that they just roll up their sleeves and say, hey, listen, I'm not going to be the victim. I'm not going to do this. And we're going to continue to move forward. Doesn't mean challenges go away. Just like Paul said, he's in the middle of one right now on another deal. But having the confidence to navigate them is the key part of that, and saying, hey, I can get through this, right? And so first of all, like I always say, success leaves clues as well. Where can we point people? We've got Salt and Pepper Stays. Where can people go see what you're doing, what you're up to? Check out these properties that you've got. Check out the new Belize property that you've got coming online. Because I always tell people, go check them out. Go stay in good properties that are operational. And so where's the best place where we can point people for you guys and what you're doing?
Yeah, that's saltandpepperstays.com. And for the sake of telling the story, so my wife's name is Sharon, my name is Paul. 10 years into our marriage, we see that Salt and Pepper Shakers have our initials, S&P. We're like, hey, we'll make a business out of that someday. And sure enough, that's how that came around.
I love it.
saltandpepperstays.com, Instagram is Salt and Pepper Stays. And our little catchphrase we came up with was, you can keep the ketchup, but the salt and pepper stays.
I love it. .com. I love it. I love it. I love it. We'll remember that one for sure. And if you don't remember it, anywhere you're listening or watching, we always post those in the show notes. So go check out Paul's portfolio and Salt and Pepper Stays and everything they've got going on, because I'm sure that this isn't going to be the end of the story. There's probably going to be more properties added to that portfolio along the way. And it's always fun to watch somebody's success and growth in this game. And so the final question I always ask Paul is, after you've been doing this, you know, and it doesn't have to be specifically in the short-term rental world. You've gone and navigated a lot of different things throughout your life, your career, everything else. And if you had to go back to your 20-year-old self and give yourself a piece of advice and say, here's what I wish I knew then that I didn't know. And you know, things you know now that you wish you could tell your younger self. Is there anything that comes to mind there?
Yeah, going way back would be, start investing early. Own real estate early, hold on to it early if you can. Like our first home, we sold because we didn't know any better. I would 100% would have held on to that if I knew what I knew 5 years after that. Just hold on to your stuff if you can. You know, as we were discussing, you know, feel free to upgrade, move it around, do stuff with it, but don't just sell it for the sake of selling it. You know, think about how that's going to turn that property into a new investment. That's the biggest thing. I would have started early, and I got my kids doing that. I've got, you know, they're all set up. Their credit ratings are already in place. They've got 401, they've got IRAs, self-directed IRAs that we started, and they're going to be buying property whether they know it or not, or like it or not, early in life. And of course, I'll hold their hand as they move forward, but they're going to be glad they did.
Love it. And I would say that is by far and away the most common answer we get from anybody that's been in the game long enough to have a few gray hairs like you and I is, I wish we would have started sooner, and I wish I wouldn't have sold my stuff. Because when we're young, we think we've got all the time in the world, and we also are attracted to those big paychecks, like on the fix and flip or development deals or something like that. We're like, hey, I'm just going to take this money, I'm going to spend it and use it. And it's fine to sell, but like you said, redeploying to long-term assets that continue to create that passive income, but also continue to go up in value, because those things make a huge difference down the line. When you can, the longer your time horizon is, the more impact and the bigger deal it's going to be for you to keep those assets and keep those properties under your belt and under your wing, and to say, hey, listen, this is a this really does create lifestyle financial freedom. So I appreciate you sharing that piece of advice. And so guys, we are going to wrap up today's episode. As always, we really, really appreciate your time. We know how valuable it is, and I appreciate you spending it with us and hope you got a lot of value out of it. I always get value out of these episodes. If you did, or you know somebody who would, I always ask you two favors at the end of every episode. The first one is share it with somebody that you think would love to hear more conversations like this in the short-term rental space, learn from people that are in the game, and so that they can walk into this game with their eyes wide open. That's our goal here at the Vacation Rental Revolution and at Vodacy, and we hope that you're able to do that. If you got more than 30 seconds, we'd love you to like, share, review, whatever platform you're watching or listening on. Those things really do help us continue to grow this show and continue to move and spread our message forward. And then the final and most important thing that we ask you as a favor at the end of every episode is go pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.